We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Coachable family? Welcome back to another episode of the Coachable Podcast. I am your host, Tori Gordon, and I'm blessed to be sitting in this space today, joined by a friend and a brother, Brandon Collinsworth, who's joined us all the way from God knows where you've been, Austin and LA and Bali and Thailand and all over the world. He's traveled many thousands of miles to be here, and I'm grateful that you spend a little time with me while you're visiting your hometown of Las Vegas.
It's an honor, always.
Yeah, I appreciate you and thrilled to have you back on the show. If you haven't heard about Brandon and his incredible work and just who he is, you know, his presence and his heart, I think, speaks for itself. If you have come across his Instagram, it is one that is filled with inspiration and motivation and words to encourage you on your journey. And this man is someone who I admire, I respect, because he knows the depths of adversity and challenge and also love and the redeeming power of love and how it can transform your life. And that's what I hope this conversation brings to you, is a remembrance and a reminder that no matter what you're facing, what you're going through, there is a part of you that is being guided to your highest timeline and everything that you desire, but you have to answer that call. And he is a reflection of what that looks like and what can happen when you answer that call. So
mic drop right there.
I mean, I could go on and on about all of the accolades and accomplishments that you have. I mean, your resume is extensive in terms of being a Nike master performance coach, the first ever signed out of Las Vegas, the work you've done with Core Power Yoga, your recent TED Talk in 2023 that went viral around self-love, your work with Warrior Retreats and how powerful and pivotal that work is and what you're doing in the Peruvian jungle and bringing sacred plant medicine to the world. There's so much we could talk about, but what I would like to start with is just, how are you? What's going on in your life? How does it feel to be back in Vegas?
Yeah. So, titles are always fleeting, right? It's like Maya Angelou said, people are going to forget what we did. People are going to forget what we said, but they're never going to forget how we made them feel. So at the end of the day, it's a feeling game. And I hope, like, when it's all said and done, nobody remembers the titles. They remember the feeling. And hopefully that feeling is a lot of love. So being back here in Vegas, back where it all started, it's always an interesting homecoming when I come back here. I call this the Neon Dojo. And only certain people get it.
Yeah.
But like, even this side of Vegas, I got stories. And every block, every street in Vegas, there's a story. Mm-hmm. Stories of triumph, stories of heartbreak, stories of loss, stories of breakthroughs. What I love about Vegas is that no matter where you are in the world, when somebody asks you where you're from and you say Vegas, it's never just like a blasé reaction, like, oh, you're from Boise, Idaho, or something like that. Yeah. People are like, oh, or nah, or like there's Vegas. A visceral reaction yeah. to Vegas. And coming back here, I'm always reminded of like how far I've come. I'm so grateful for the teachings of this city. This city gave me the game to be able to finally leap into my hero's journey. This city and showed me what the shadow world looked like. Mm-hmm. It introduced me to my vices. It introduced me to my weaknesses. It also introduced me to my strengths, and it initiated me in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So every time I come back here and pay homage and pay love to Vegas, I do that. Yeah. And I'm so proud of certain individuals like yourself who have come to Vegas and grabbed the torch and have like rooted and started sharing so much love, because this city is a vortex. Mm. And so it's incredible to be back. When I'm here, it's always quick. It's deep. I'm very conscientious of my energy. I like tap in, tap mm-hmm. out up at Red Rock Canyon yeah. and then I'm gone. Yeah. But like, it's always a beautiful opportunity to recharge when I'm able to like drop in with individuals mm-hmm. like yourself and just share some codes.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. I mean, I read something you posted a couple of days ago before you came back into town about what Vegas has taught yeah. you. And I remember something about, you know, this city will test you mm-hmm. and what kind of man you are.
100%.
And what you say you're about. Are you really about?
Yeah.
You know, because when the women come out and the bottles come yeah. out and this comes out, it's like, are you who you say you are?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I love about you and I respect about you is your commitment and your devotion to being a man of like honor mm-hmm. and a man of your word and integrity that you like. When I speak about Brandon, and I don't even know you that well, but like your energy speaks for itself. And the work that you do, which is like, you are one that you're not a talking mouthpiece. You're a walking example mm-hmm. of the work that you teach and embodiment of that. And I think the world needs that so badly, is examples of men who do what they say they're going to do.
It's so important. And it's important to also know that nobody arrives at just a black belt. You got to get your butt handed to you many times in the dojo of life mm-hmm. to eventually choose a set of values and a path that is like concrete. Mm-hmm. And so to arrive at this juncture of my life where I am who I say I am, I had to fail a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of the vices of Vegas, like you think you know who you are until you all of a sudden have access to it all. And then it's like, who are you really? And that is a part of the journey. And what I've realized is with great power comes great responsibility. You know, you go to any indigenous society in the world and there's these villages and there's all these people in these villages, but there's one chief. So for those who have been blessed to be in a position of leadership or chiefhood, you have to take that seriously. And what I'm learning, because this is a game of energy, right? Mm. There's levels to the game. Mm. And although like you can hide what's on the physical, you can't hide what's on the energetic.
Yeah.
You can't hide from the spiritual realm. And what I'm learning as I'm going deeper into my journey is that when you are aligned and when you are who you say you are, the codes are accessed yeah. and the doors continue to open from the spiritual realm to the physical realm to the material realm. And that's incredible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I grew up as a superhero head. Mm. I like, you know, growing up in the projects, one of my ways to escape was the X-Men. And the reason why I got into personal training was because I wanted to like bring out the superhero in myself. But there's a definitive characteristic of superheroes. Mm. Superheroes and supervillains, there's a very thin line. Supervillains use their powers for themselves. And we see this in these coaching spaces, in the spiritual spaces, this covert narcissism that inevitably is self-fulfilling and is hurts people rather than helps people. Superhero uses their powers to serve others. Mm-hmm. You know, echoing Muhammad Ali, where he said like service to others is the rent we pay for our time here on earth. Mm-hmm. And so the more I lean into that, the more I realize like, okay, I've been blessed at 39 years of life with a position of leadership of young chiefhood, and I'm going to take it serious.
Yeah.
And it's just been really incredible to see what happens when there's a bar and a standard set. So a lot of people come into my realm and they're like, he's intense. Mm-hmm. But it's like, when you look to the greats, you know, Kobe, Jordan, Ali, there's a standard. Mm-hmm. Championship level means you either come correct or you can't play ball.
Yeah.
And because I've been standing in that filter for a while, it's incredible the brothers and the sisters that are also like, yo, I'm ready to play ball too. Mm-hmm. And so right now the team is strong. Mm-hmm. Love is strong. Love wins. And we ready to go at it.
Like,
bring the supervillains, because we bring in weapons of mass construction. Asada Shakur style.
Yes. Yes. It's like, the spiritual avengers are ready.
Exactly.
They have united and we are all ready to go.
Yeah.
Go in. I feel that. I feel that deeply. You know, like you said, you don't wake up a black belt. You don't wake up with a beautiful, thriving relationship. You don't wake up with the body of your dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes work. It takes discipline. It takes commitment. And these are things you understand, I think, on a level that a lot of people don't, because it's required to do world-class shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all have people we can look to that raise the standard and push the edge of what's possible. You know, when before there was a 4-minute mile runner, there was a dream of running a 4-minute mile.
Right.
And somebody's got to go first. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to go. And that's what I love about, you know, the work of shamanism is they're willing to go where no one else is going.
All the way.
What is your training for chiefhood been looking like lately? Like, what are you stepping into? What are you learning? What is that next level for you? Like, because I know you've been extremely disciplined in your, you know, your workouts and your physical life and all of those things. Like, I think you did 365 days last year of training.
Yeah, we're on day 428 straight right now.
No misses. Some of y'all can't even do a week.
No misses. No misses.
No misses. What has that shown you in those, that many days of doing something over and over again?
It's just consistency, compounded effort, compounded energy is a game changer. You know, Frederick Douglass said, I prayed for my freedom for 20 years, but nothing changed until I started praying with my legs. Praying with your legs means action. And in yoga, we speak about tapas. Tapas is fire, discernment, meeting it with energy. Mm-hmm. It's tapas, svadhyaya, self-study, and then surrender, balance of yin and yang. And so just showing up every day is keep staying honest with myself. Mm-hmm. And most days suck.
Yeah.
But it's like in the suck is where the magic is found.
Yeah.
And a lot of those days I do 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that.
Right.
I don't even say like, yo, that's just every day I'm committed to the physical practice, but it's not about the physical. That's what people don't realize. I was speaking about earlier, the koshas in yoga, and they say, instead of one body, we have 5 bodies.
Okay.
We have our physical body, our energetic body, our emotional body, our wisdom body, and our love body. Mm. And the physical, our Anamaya Kosha, is the access point to the rest of it. Mm. And so just showing up, making sure my temple is right, my temple is tight, it allows me to go into those deeper spaces. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I did that is because I did get out of shape. 428 days ago, my mom passed. Mm. My stepmom committed suicide. My nephew got shot in a drive-by. One of my best friends got put on trial for a murder. It was like this crazy thing. And I remember just finding my solace and peace in food. It was some place that I always have gone to, was food. And next thing you know, like one day turns to 10 days, 10 days turns to 100 days, and I'm out of shape and I'm not clear. And so I decided that I just needed to like tighten up. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Thailand and I lived in a fight camp for 3 months. And that was the beginning of like, all right, let's stay with it. Mm. One thing to be at a fight camp, it's a different thing to be like on the road and everything. And so now it's just like, I'm not stopping. Mm-hmm. Like you can't go this many days and then stop. And so it's been cool. Again, once you set a standard, it's a great filter. People either are going to join the standard or they're going to be like offended by the standard. Yes. And it's been so cool to see how many people are like, yo, B, I'm on day number 65 right now. I'm like, get it, man.
Yes.
So the physical is really important to cultivate our temples so that we can hold the energetics.
Yeah.
So our emotions are stable. And so we can tap into our own wisdom bodies. Mm-hmm. There's so much wisdom within us.
We're blocking it.
But people are blocking it. Exactly.
I was watching something this week and it was a video on social media. And he was saying one of the best ways to start to manifest and connect with your truth is like lighten up, like literally physically lighten your load. Like what are you carrying physically? And the lighter you are, the more clean food you put in, like the more water that you drink, all of the things, your vessel becomes lighter to start to receive the codes and the downloads and the wisdom that before were just, you were so dense and so blocked. You can't receive it, you know?
Exactly.
And I've been talking a lot about this in my community lately, even this week, about values. You know, you talk about standards and we talk about values, and in the huddle, we call it the huddle. It's like,
I love it.
Why are you here? You know, why do you show up to this? And for them, one of their values is growth, you know? And I think for me and the people in my world, you're not really hanging out with me unless you value growth on some level.
Right.
And I had to say to them, you know, one of the questions, and I'm always reminded of this when I look at your stuff. I asked them, when's the last time you did something really hard? And for some of them, it was like, oh, like several months ago or last time I went through a breakup or this, that, the other. And I was like, if we say and we want to claim that growth is a value, then you need to be living in the uncomfortable on a consistent basis. And your willingness to do something intentionally hard is what's going to increase your capacity to be with so much like relational discomfort that is thrown at you that you didn't choose.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And our growth is in our edges. And that's as long as we're playing in the field of this is comfortable and easy, we never know what we're actually capable of, you know? And so I think it's just like this prerequisite for really becoming what you can be, because otherwise you will just never know. You'll never know.
Truth.
And so that's something I've been like thinking more and more about. And even as I mentioned to you, you know, last time we spoke, I had not sat with Mother Aya, and I did ayahuasca recently. And since then her spirit has shown me like life is a ceremony. Mm-hmm. Everything is
like ayahuasca.
Yes. And I have brought that into every aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's transformed the way I experience things, because there's a sacredness to all things, not just the spirit, what we consider, oh, this is like a ceremonial practice. And something my friends and I have a couple of friends who sit with tea on a regular basis. And how that's become a ceremonial practice of like dropping down. And even through the practice of drinking tea, it's like this
ancient
settling. Yeah. Yes. And it's a plant, like this beautiful plant that we're given, and how it has its own spirit and everything. And so one of the things I'm excited to learn more about from you is kind of, what does ceremony mean to you in your day-to-day life? How do you take the work that you do down in the Peruvian jungle with ayahuasca and then bring it home with you? And what does ceremony mean for you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people who are around me, they hear me use the term life ayahuasca.
Okay.
So when I say life ayahuasca, it is this ode to the fact that life is a ceremony. Mm-hmm. How we show up, how we love, how we handle conflict, how we take care of ourselves, take care of our bodies. It's so much more than just the yoga mat. It's so much more than just the temple. It's so much more than the ashram. Mm-hmm. The ceremony is now, and the ceremony is in each and every moment. And when we start to approach life ceremonially, mm-hmm. it opens up so many beautiful doors. Mm-hmm. Like you can't access the sacred from a non-sacred space. So like when one chooses to begin to move from a sacred space and a sacred energy, it inevitably opens up the doors for the sacred.
Yeah.
And that is, again, we see what we are. Mm-hmm. Starts within. And as we align within, we align our external world as well. And that is, again and again, you know, the medicine, the medicines of the world, from martial arts to yoga mm-hmm. to plant medicines, it's all about inner alignment.
Yeah.
Inner alignment and love.
Yeah.
Those two things, alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
Hard, right? Mm-hmm. At times, especially when we're taught fear, we're taught hate, we're taught to compare and taught to judge and taught to fight and taught to critique. Again, are those things appropriate for a ceremonial setting? Well, if life's a ceremony, it's similar to one going to an ashram. They're not going to bring their metaphorical dirty shoes into mm-hmm. the ashram.
Mm-hmm.
When we treat life as a ceremony, we take off our dirty shoes as fast as possible. We cleanse our thoughts and we walk into it with a sacredness.
Yeah.
And therefore, a garden then becomes fertile
mm-hmm.
and flowers grow instead of weeds.
Yeah. There's like this reverence
mm-hmm.
for life and all aspects of it in the full spectrum of what it looks like to right. be a human being.
Right.
And with that, one of the things that I keep coming back to, especially with my recent experiences with plant medicine, is that it's like this reunion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I call it. It's like a reunion, like this divine union of self coming right. back yeah. to self. And I'm in this space, man, like in my life, I'm just like, I wrote at the top of my journal, I'm where you were, I think, maybe last time. I'm in the God pocket. Like, I'm just like falling in love with myself. Like, I'm just like in love with life. And it's like I just got married, you know, and I'm like in love,
yeah.
but with like me and with every day and the unfolding and the surprises. And I'm like, whatever shows up is like, it's going to be beautiful and I'm going to be able to handle it. But it's, you know, so many people describe their experiences as like coming home mm-hmm. and this remembrance of who they really are. And I'll tell you, like, there's like this energetic posture
mm-hmm.
now of like this humble bow that I like experienced all the time. Like of just like bowing before the greatness that is around me all of the time. You know what I mean? And I think I'm only able to perceive that and experience that and like be aware of that because I've cleaned out.
Yeah.
Like I have like cleaned house on, and I'm doing that on so many different levels, like physically, mentally, yeah, emotionally, everything. Yeah. yeah. And I didn't know, you know, I held on to this possibility of like, maybe I could get there. Maybe that's a reality. Like, I hope. Maybe it was like a hope, like, oh, life can be really good. And now I'm like living in the reality of that, where I'm daily reprogramming that like life has to be hard and mm-hmm. life has to like, I have to suffer and there has to be tension and stress all the time. And there still are things obviously that come up, but I just approach it in such a different way. And it's wild to see that there's like a Tori now, there's like the me now. And there mm-hmm. was like a me before. You know, especially sitting with Aya.
It's the journey and it's all the work that even led up to the Aya yeah. that allowed you to receive the Everything. Aya the way you received it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things. A lot of times people only want to celebrate their arrivals. They don't want to celebrate all the forms of themselves that brought them to the arrival.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for all the choices, all the messiness. You wouldn't be right where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And what is beautiful is 10 years from now, you're going to look back on this version of yourself and be like, damn,
I
girl.
I thought I knew something
oh,
then.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's the quote that what if the limit to your sky was just the beginning of your universe? And the deeper I go into this space, that's the beauty of it. Because like, how good can it get? Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we have no idea how amazing it can be.
Yeah. That's just been my prayer. Yeah, that's been my prayer. Show me how good it can
get. Yeah, like add zeros to them all. You add a zero, it's 10x. Exponential love, exponential success, exponential abundance. Like, God, show me, if I'm going to be a servant of you, show me how great it can be. And then I just want to echo the fact that you brought up bowing to yourself. To bow to oneself and self-love only comes from self-love. Mm. When one really begins to see themselves, how could you not wake up and bow to the sacredness that you are. One is. There's a quote that I love. It's a Serbian proverb, and it goes, be humble, for you are made of earth. Be noble, for you are made of stars. And it's this remembrance, like, we are earth. We are going to return to the earth, but we are also star beings, like quantumly unquantifiable.
Yeah.
And once one really grasps that, how can you not be in love with all that is?
Yeah, because now I know where I come from. I know who I am. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The question for years, and even with my clients before this experience, like, the first question we start with is, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that question even feels so hollow in the way I approached it then, which was like, I'm my titles. And I'm like, if I strip away those things, who am I? Right. And now when I say, who am I? Like, I remember. I've seen it. Yeah. I know who she is. I know who I am and where I come from. And so because I've gotten that, I can't unsee it. And anyone who's had an experience, whether it's with ayahuasca or psilocybin or any other plant medicine or just a transcendental meditation, it doesn't have to be plant medicine. But when you see the truth, the light comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've been describing it is like, these experiences, if you've been looking out at the world through a windshield that's dirty, this comes and cosmically cleans the windshield of your consciousness so that you can see clearly. And when you do that, everything changes. The light comes on, and like, if I want to go, the reason we do these things is so that we don't go back to who we were. And I remember when the second cup of ayahuasca was offered, and the whole first cup, I was like, there's no way I'm going for a second cup. Yeah, I was like, in this negotiation with myself, second cup's offered. I'm like, I know this is for me. Yes. And he asks, you know, he says, how was your first cup? And I said, it was good, but there's more. And I went back to my mat and I laid down and I looked at my friend and I said, I didn't come here to stay the same, you know,
and diving deep.
Yeah. I didn't come here to go back to my old life and do the things I did before. Came here to change.
Right.
And when you open up and allow yourself to go there, if you do go back, you will have to go to some addiction to numb it, to try and forget what you've seen when you see the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not just in plant medicine. It's like, when you know the truth, even in the silence and the stillness of your own heart, if you know this relationship isn't for me, or this job isn't for me, or I need to move in this direction, you will have to find something to numb that, to try and silence that voice.
That's why The Matrix is so powerful, the movie. I probably watched it like 200 times because it's like, it blows my mind every time I watch it.
Yeah.
But Morpheus is like, after a certain age, we don't wake people up because it's too much for them to handle. A lot of times people don't want to dive deep into the truth because it's a stark and jarring
contrast. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it sometimes is easier to go back to the addictions, go back to the familiar, go back to the relationships. Because part of the waking up process is a realization that everything you were might not be of your truth.
Right.
And when you've built a construct.
An identity
around it, to let all of that fall apart is a very, very challenging process.
Yeah.
It's a metaphorical death, a deep, dark night of the soul probably is going to come through that process. But as a fellow spelunker who has been in many caves, the light of the other side of those dark nights of the soul is everything. And so there's a quote that I love, and it's, can you love yourself enough to struggle? Can you love yourself enough to go through the struggle of recalibrating, reforming, re-becoming in order to be your truest self? Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, they might say yes, but actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
But I can only say for all those on the journey, it's so worth it. Just go and yes, and like worth let it. And it's only in those spaces, like, right? It's one thing to read a book. It's one thing to like go to a seminar. But when you have direct experience, mm-hmm. when you come through those things, that's where power is. Because you're like, I know what I know. I've been through it. And this is what it is.
Yeah.
And that is powerful. That is when self-love becomes like armored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true power, because when your power is sourced from anything outside of you, your peace is sourced from any, your bank account, your relationship status, your whatever, mm-hmm. you're always at risk of losing that.
Yeah.
And now it's like the substance of things hoped for, the Bible says, is like, I have the substance of what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's not out there. Like, anywhere. We say the answers are within. Yep. Like, this shows you that the universe that's out there is also exists in here. Mm-hmm. And you start to explore that. And my heart just bursts, because I want people to know. I want them to know it could. I want them to see the beauty, you know? Mm-hmm.
That's where you and me align so beautifully. It's like everything I'm speaking about through my platforms is like, yo, wake up.
Yeah.
Like, wake up, see yourself, see what is possible. And
yeah,
it can be heartbreaking to see people stuck in a paradigm that is of the lower realms of the spectrum of seeing just like all the ills of the world rather than seeing how beautiful it can become. Mm-hmm. Beautiful thing about, you heard of Plato's Allegory of the Cave?
I've heard it, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah, so I'll just break it down real quick. So when I first heard this, it was like my first year of community college, and I had this incredible professor who just blew my mind, paradigm shift everything. And he put me on this deep, like, philosophical reading tip, and he introduced me to Plato. Allegory of the Cave basically says that there's a story of these four individuals mm-hmm. who are sitting in a cave, and they're chained, and they can't look around. They can only look at this wall in front of them. And behind them, there's a fire, and there's this guard behind them that makes shapes, that mm-hmm. cast silhouettes on the walls. And so their whole entire worldview and paradigm lives on that wall. And they bestow awards on who can identify what shadow fastest.
Yeah.
It's a whole world. And so Plato says, what happens if somebody comes down and unshackles one of the prisoners? Well, first and foremost, his eyes are going to be so accustomed to the dark that as he's being brought to the light, it's going to hurt his eyes.
Yeah, it's disorienting. And
so, yeah, so the story, this person takes one of the prisoners out into the light. And initially, it's too much. Mm-hmm. He steps out of the cave. He can't even see. Mm-hmm. He wants to go back to what was comfortable. Mm-hmm. He wants to go back to the familiar. But eventually his eyes adjust and he starts to see the sun. He starts to see the grass. He starts to see the beauty. He starts to see the stars. He's like, oh my God, this is incredible. This is so beautiful. I want to share it with my people. Mm-hmm. And so he goes back to the cave. But by the time he goes back to the cave, his eyes have become adjusted to the light. He can't see no more in the dark. And he's trying to like make his way down there. And he goes down to that spot where he once sat, and his friends, his people are still doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So many people on the journey, they go work with plant medicine, they go do yoga, they travel, they have like this out of body experience. They go back to their families, same thing happening. Mm-hmm. So he sits down and they're still naming the shadows on the walls, and they ask him to do it. And he's like, I can't see it. And they're like, see what happens when you go to the light? Your eyes have become ruined. And so they become angry with him. They're like, if he would ever try to ruin our eyes like this, we would actually kill him. That's mm-hmm. what Plato says. Mm-hmm. And so the guy leaves dejected because he found this beautiful new reality that was truth to him. And the moral of the story is like, no matter what, once you see the light, the duty of like a leader or a real light worker is to descend into the caves as many times as possible. Just like that one guy came down to the cave mm-hmm. and pulled that one guy out. Mm-hmm. Even if it's one person trying to like also bring them into truth. Mm-hmm. And that process can be heartbreaking at times. Yeah. And I share the sentiments when I go back to the projects and my people are still there. It's like, damn, bro. Like, can we just, can you please just come with me to Peru?
Yeah.
Can I like, can you get a passport, please?
Yes.
I'll pay for you to go to Peru. You just get a passport or something like that.
Yeah.
It can be heartbreaking, but that is, it's a story that is echoed through every tradition, every school of thought is like this heartbreaking, heart expanding journey of like into truth and also being able to bring people into their own self-realization.
Yeah. I'm there. I'm feeling that so deeply. Yeah. Do you have any advice for integrating after you've like had an experience like that? And then there's this longing to, and this mission and this like purpose. Now mm-hmm. this is your purpose. You know what I mean? Like this in so many ways.
It's a dance, because right?
It's also like, you know, you go up like in the story, you go into the light and then you go down to your people and they don't want to come. Mm-hmm. And there's this grief because like you see mm-hmm. what could be, you see the possibility, you have access to truth. And there's a loneliness in that.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, I mean, there are others who get it and you'll find those two people, but. There is a time for many people in their integration where they're like, I'm the only one.
100%. Yeah. I mean, there's so many, it's a multifaceted mm-hmm. Journey and it comes with all emotions.
Yeah.
And the truth is like some people actually want to be in the cave.
Yeah.
They're actually more comfortable there
mm-hmm.
and that's their reality. And that's what they've chosen. And like, again, you know, hermetic laws of polarity, like the cave is a necessary backdrop for the notion of the sun.
Yeah.
The dark is necessary for the light. The light is necessary for the dark. And so one of the things I had to be careful with once I started going in on my journey was like virtue signaling that mm-hmm. I was like, oh, look how woke I am. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go. And mm-hmm. I remember I would actually... So the ego.
Yeah.
The ego
Let's
loves
talk about that, please.
The ego loves mala beats. The ego loves namastes.
Yeah.
The ego loves plant medicine.
Yeah.
The ego loves to say, yo, look at I've made it.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we say like white belt mentality with black belt swagger. Mm-hmm. Shoshin, beginner's mind. Put the black belt on. As soon as you put it on, take it back off, put the white belt back on. And I remember like as I started to like rise out of poverty. I would go back and I'd be super hypercritical and judgmental to all my people. And one of the stories that really touched me was like, I would always go to my sister's house and I would always judge her.
Mm.
I was like, always like, she's out of shape. She needs to work out. She's got like three kids, like from different baby daddies. Like, and it was like, yo, you just get on the path, get on the path. And one day I finally went over there and I was like, every time I go over there, I'm not in love. I'm not coming from love.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just like, let me just try to be present in love.
Mm.
Went over there, didn't judge, didn't say, yo, your house is messy. Yo, you need to fix yourself. You need to do this. And all of a sudden she comes to me and she's like, hey, I want to show you something. Mm. And she takes me to the kitchen. It's messy. But she opens this cabinet and there's this beautifully organized collection of teas that I never knew was there. And she all of a sudden shares to me that she has this deep fascination with teas and she collects teas. And I found that like my sister, who I thought was so lost, actually had a lot of beauty in that space.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I humbled myself out of my hierarchy and my ego that I was able to actually meet her.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing is like force never feels good.
Mm-mm.
Our next partner is AG1, the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. I drink AG1 literally every day, and I started to give them a try because I realized that in order to be the real champion of my life, I've got to take care of my body. It's truly an absolute non-negotiable. I drink AG1 in the morning before I start my day, and it makes me feel like I'm doing something good for my body as a positive first action and habit of my day. Because I've realized that one small thing that I do is the quickest way that I can create lasting change in my life. I think about it like this: my choices, my actions, they matter. So I think of drinking AG1 as a choice. It's like a vote for the person that I want to become. Someone who's balanced, vibrant, healthy, full of energy. And that's why I love AG1. It tastes so great and gives me everything that I need to feel my best. So if a comprehensive solution is what you need for your supplement routine, then try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/coachable. That's drinkag1.com/coachable. Check them out today.
Here on the Coachable Podcast, we understand the importance of maintaining our mental and physical well-being in order to create a life that feels as good as it looks. That's why I'm thrilled to have Unified Healing sponsoring this episode. Unified Healing is an innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. This groundbreaking technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, and purification, providing a path to optimal health and performance. With centers located around the world, Unified Healing makes accessing the EE System technology easy and affordable, no matter where you're located. The EE System offers a unique opportunity to experience a new approach to wellness that you might not have ever considered before. It's designed to help you feel rejuvenated, balanced, and perform at your best. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/coachable to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/coachable. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. Now, let's get back to this episode.
When we're like condemned and we're told, yo, you're this, you're that, like imagine all the times that that's happened to you, or just remember all the time that happened, it's happened to yourself, mm-hmm. never feels good. Mm-hmm. And so part of like bringing people, inviting people into the space is like what Richard Rudd said is like, people don't need more things. They just need more love. They need to remember what it feels like to be in the presence of love.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Because in that, there's safety to their then safety. Look at
exactly.
all the things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because I was experiencing something similar recently, and I was talking to actually my therapist around this same kind of topic of discussion. And there was a friend of mine who I was challenged with how I could support her the best way, you know? And he asked me, he reflected back to me. He was like, what did you need when you were in her position?
Mm. That's a question right there.
And I was like, I said, you know, I want to say something spiritual, like acceptance or love or this, that, and other. And I was like, truth is I needed time. I needed time to come, to go through the things that I needed to go through mm-hmm. that would eventually, you know, wake me up at one point when I was ready.
But that's it.
I was, you know, I needed time. And so that like unlocked something for me of like, trust the timing, not just of your life, but mm-hmm. of everybody else's journey too, you know, that they're on a path and they're being guided and that they haven't been forgotten about.
Exactly. You know? You can't force somebody to hear something they are not ready to hear, but you can never underestimate the power of planting a seed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when that's supposed to grow, that's supposed to grow.
Yeah. So true.
And that's just the delicate balance of it.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because you're getting your PhD right now.
I am.
How far are you into your program?
Just finished my first year.
Okay, in neuroscience, correct?
Neuroscience, yeah. Okay.
At UNLV?
At UNLV,
Working with Dr. G?
Dr. G.
Love
Shout
him.
Out to Dr. G.
Dr. G, we love you. This is something I'm fascinated in, especially about, because I've kind of approached this. I'm like, I'm really into the science, mm-hmm. what's happening in my mind, especially in these plant medicine experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm like, help me understand what is going on. And it's this intersection of the science and the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Even for me as like a little girl, so much of now I'm coming back to the things that I was connected to as a little girl, like my dream world. Mm-hmm. Like I've had very vivid dreams since I was a little girl. Things like lucid dreaming. Just now I'm like, what is the science say about these things. What are you studying specifically in your program? Do you have an emphasis on anything? Is there something you're really interested in studying and looking at in your doctoral program? And I'm curious, like, what are you learning right now?
Yeah, so there's a couple different tracks that we're touching on. The first is the psychology of greatness. Mm. As you see that I deeply study the greats, Kobe's and the Jordans and the Maya Angelou's, anybody who's like left a significant impact. I feel like there's a similar neuropathology there.
Okay.
The other is psychedelics and psychedelics' ability to amplify learning. And this is something that me and Dr. Guadagnoli are collaborating on, but is psychedelics the Holy Grail? And if you look actually into the historical books, psychedelics were pathways that certain people would use to understand their world in a way that bestowed power, understanding, self-mastery, etc. And it's cool that it's, you know, shout out to all of the trailblazers that have come before to get us to this point, to be able to like actually start to dive into this atheogenic realm where everything and anything is possible. And what's crazy is when you pull back the layers, like all societies use some type of psychedelic experience to tap into things beyond this reality. And so that is the other part of the PhD in neuroscience. What's beautiful is, shout out to my dad who, you know, rest in power, passed away 6 months ago. He went down to the jungles and he carved out a relationship with the people. And so the shamans, the plant medicine masters of the jungles are like my brothers. And so, you know, through Warrior, we have two lodges in Peruvian Amazon jungle where all of, not all of, but a lot of these psychedelic teachers live. And so just to see how much it's been impactful to my personal life and also the people in my life, it would be a disservice not to begin to really bring the science behind that.
Yeah. And I'm it's coming.
Yeah. And there's the anecdotal and then there's the empirical. Science, you know, it's a little bit funny sometimes because you have to always like prove something or have data, but anecdotal is like when you know, you know. And you can't really like scientifically prove what you know, but you know, when you go through something.
That's why I want, I'm like, how can we scientifically prove the spiritual knowing?
That's all coming online, but then there's the, there's beyond knowing, right? Yeah. It's like one of the most humbling moments of my life. I was sitting on the beach in Hawaii and I was looking at my fingernail and I was like, I don't even know how my fingernail grows. And I'm over here trying to like philosophize about how the world works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, there's understanding that just is beyond knowing as well that I don't know if science will ever be able to actually
capture it.
It's like, how can you capture God? That's like the ego would be like, yo, I'm going to go ahead and find an experiment to be able to capture God. God's like, bro.
Good luck. So, and that's, and I think because of that, that's why I can and will forever stand in awe.
And how beautiful is that, right?
Yeah.
Because if we did capture lightning in a bottle, where would the awe be?
There wouldn't.
We would be like, well, we're God. We got it figured out.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing thing is that's it goes that deep. The video game doesn't stop. It just gets more and more amazing.
I know. There was a moment in my Aya journey. Yeah, I talk about the mind like a house. Sort of like my conscious mind is this room that I'm in, this chair, and I'm talking to you and I'm very aware of where I am. My subconscious mind is all the rooms I could go in. If I put my attention there, I could go in that room of that memory or I could focus on this thing. And then my unconscious is the whole house, you know, the attic and the basin and all of the rooms I don't have access to. And the collective consciousness is the entire, you know, all of the surrounding land and everything else. And in my experience, in my journey, I was going through these different doors, you know, and accessing different parts of myself. And in one door, I walked into infinity, into the infinite. And I was like, oh, shit. My, there's a part of me that was felt like I couldn't contain it, you know, like the mind's not supposed to understand the eternal and the infinite. And I, there was a part of me that was like, I can see how I could be like on the brink of psychosis to try and understand the infinite. So I peered in there and I was like, and I, it was just forever love, forever love. And it was just like, forever it's going to go on and on and on and on and on. And we can't fathom, like we can't understand what that's like, that it, there is no ending.
Yeah.
The infinite loop circle. It was just like, it will forever go on. And I was like, wow.
The mind can't understand it.
Yeah.
And then you just accept that you are it.
Yeah.
We are that infinity.
And that's why I think I can walk in so much power now, because I know that there is no risk of ever running out.
That's a bar right there.
Yeah. Like I'm not, this well goes deep forever and like forever. So I can just keep plugging in to source. And that's what it felt like. If you've ever seen Avatar, it was like plugging into AWA.
Yeah, yeah.
And being like, I see.
There's a deleted scene, by the way,
really?
From Avatar of them doing ayahuasca.
Mm-mm.
You just look it up on YouTube. James Cameron, all them.
They're all
tapped in.
Tapped in. So tapped in. Okay. One other question. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But given that you, how many times have you sat with sacred plant medicine at this point?
Hundreds
or
not hundreds, but every year I do a deep diet.
Okay.
And that probably for the last 8 years. So that, and when I first started plant medicine, so this is just some context, you know, my first plant medicine ceremony, I'm here in Vegas. I'm doing my thing. I got my gyms. I think I'm woke. I'm like, yo, I got this. And I got invited to work with ayahuasca actually in Vegas. And so my first plant medicine ceremony was super powerful. Mm-hmm. My ancestors were all like, bro, you're disrespecting us. Mm-hmm. Like my African origin, they all were like, you are absolutely disrespecting us.
Wow.
It's time to like check yourself. And so I started going deeper into the plant medicine space at that time. And then I realized, I'm like, my father's been working in the jungles. Like, let me tap into the people I know down there. And so once I went to the jungles, it was a completely different context. Mm. It was like night and day in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to be my experience.
From like instruments and music to pure Icaros. Mm-hmm. And from simply showing up and doing ayahuasca to like actually doing dietas.
Yeah.
And so the dietas is really what like just unlocked so much. The dietas, like, and for those that don't know, dietas, there's the diet you do pre-ayahuasca, post-ayahuasca, that's like cleaning out your system, no salt, no sugar, no sex. An actual dieta, for those that don't know, is the shaman will choose a master teacher plant in conjunction with ayahuasca, or sometimes not in conjunction with ayahuasca, that you also diet on from anywhere from a week to like a couple months.
And so it's part of your diet.
Part of the diet. Mm-hmm. And so like once I did my first diet, it became a game changer.
Wow.
And so the last 6 years, every time I've gone to the jungles, I would do a different diet on a different tree. Mm-hmm. Started with Bobenzana. Then I worked with Chontaduro, Wacomayocaspi, and Macha Mango. And then it was Shiwawaku. And then just recently I did a diet on Ahosacha, the wild garlic. And I remember going down there and I'm like, bro, what do you mean dieting on garlic? Like garlic, like what do you, some garlic you buy in a store?
Yeah.
That's like weird. And little did I know, like wild garlic, like shout out to Ahosacha.
Shout out to wild garlic.
Shout out to garlic.
I'm going to never look at garlic the same.
Little did I know, like, that was the craziest teacher plant
really
that I've worked with, because like she is known as like the cleaner of distortion. And I remember like when I worked with Bobenzana, because when you work with these plants, you inevitably meet like the spirit of the plant. And it sounds kind of like woo-woo in our society, but Native Americans had spirits of the trees. Like all these indigenous societies, you connect with that. Mm-hmm. And so like Bob Manzana was just this like loving, beautiful presence of unconditional love. Mm. Chantakiro was strength. Wakomayokaspe was like the pharmacy of the jungle. Mm. Machamongo and Shiwawaku are massive trees, pillars and strength. But Ahosacha was like the cleaner. And I remember with the medicine, you would do the ayahuasca, and then you would also, during those days of the diet, you would bathe in the garlic and you would also drink the garlic. And I remember doing an ayahuasca ceremony during the time I was working with Ahosacha, and all of a sudden the spirit and energy of Ahosacha shows up. She's like, "Oh, you thought I was just like some store-bought garlic?" Mm. She's like, "Let me show you why they call me the cleaner of the jungle. And let me tell you, like, roughest, hardest internal scrubbing I've had, scrubbing the distortions, moving the distortions, and pivotal in who I need to be as a man, pivotal in who I need to be on my path." Mm. All of these trees are like Go-Go Power Rangers. You can call them in like at different times. And so these are my allies now. And so
that's the A-team.
The A-team. Mm-hmm. The A-team is only getting stronger too. And even Mapacho. A lot of people don't know that tobacco is like one of the hardest diets one can do. They drink the tobacco.
Do they?
There's tobaqueros in the jungles. Mapacho being straight for protection and strength.
Yep.
And so long story short to your question, the last, you know, 6-7 years, every time I would go to the jungles, I would do a different diet. Mm-hmm. And that took it to a whole nother level. Mm-hmm. That's when I started like understanding the medicine in a way that was deeper than just like visually tripping and going into like the real teachings of of the plants.
And do you feel called to shamanism yourself, like to the work of, or is it you go down and work with the medicine men and the shamans of the jungle?
The wild thing is like going into the jungles, like when you got guys who've been doing it for 20, 30 years, black belt.
Yeah.
Like the Royce Gracies of, you know, the Kobes of the jungles. Mm-hmm. One, you realize how much you don't know, but I also feel like certain people are given a direct call to it. My brother, John Kempf out of Maui, he's on the shaman path right now. And so last time he was down, he sat with a plant called Chiriksonongo. And that is in isolation. They would say it's a very jealous energy plant, meaning if you disrespect the diet when you're on the plant, like
it's just me, just me and you.
You can get sick and everything. Mm. So he's going back and he's doing Uchosonongo, and he was called to be a medicine man.
Wow.
The medicine men down there have never said that I am that. Mm. I think that for me, it's more a refinement of my leadership and that's the path I'm on. So I haven't been called.
You know, and many plant medicines, they make you face yourself and your fears. She'll show you like what you really fear. I'm curious, with all the work that you've done, do you still resonate with fear in any way? And if so, what do you fear now?
So there was two fears that I had. The first fear was like losing my mom in a traumatic way. And that happened. And I was like life-changing in the most beautiful way imaginable. And then the second fear happened in 2020, previous to that, was going broke and going back to the hood. Like you make it out of the projects, you make it to like the highest level possible. I was like, I'm never going back. And 2020 was like, all right, bank account, $14. Welcome back to the projects. I went back March like 13th, 2020. And I'm sitting in my mom's trailer. Long story short, my mom passed 2 years after that. So to be able to go back and have that time with her was great. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the biggest lessons of my life, was going back to the trailer park that I despised and loathed and, you know, thought of as like failure. And I remember one night I was there and I was just meditating, and second time I ever heard from God, like direct, like, yo. And he was like, she was like, laughing at me. They were like, oh, you thought that trailer parks and ashrams were temples, or you thought ashrams were temples or sacred spaces. Trailer parks can be also temples too, if you learn how to tune in. And that's when I just like understood that sometimes zero is the most powerful place you can be. Mm. Sometimes you have to remove everything that was you to be everything that you need to become. And, and so those were the two fears, my mom dying and going broke again. And after that, nah, I don't fear anything.
Yeah. I came home and, you know, they say that obviously ayahuasca is a spirit that you can communicate with and have a conversation with. And she stays with you. And I've stayed in communication with her and just in a way of like, just like walking through life in a prayerful state kind of. And, she said, I went into prayer and I just said, help me to not be afraid. And then I asked myself, I was like, what am I afraid of? And I just wrote down whatever I could think of that felt true, you know, fear of being alone or fear of being abandoned or whatever it might be. And then I just saw myself just like circling this. And she was like, I will help you face these fears because this is what controls you. And if you can face your fear, you will be unstoppable. Like, because there's nothing that you will fear. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's the path that I'm on. I feel if I have any call in my life, it's to go into the cave and to do the thing I'm scared to do.
Joseph Campbell, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like, and it's not saying that fear is not there. It's knowing the fear is there and through courage, stepping into the fear regardless. Knowing and trusting that the tools are there and that you're going to come out on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. Expanded, I think that's what people are scared of, is that they're not going to come out on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, there's always that possibility, but, the cool thing is like, if you are alive, you're batting 1,000. Like, you are undefeated at life so far. So like, keep going. But you know, I was listening to my spirit animal, David Goggins, this morning. Shout out to Goggins. And he was saying that people are like always saying my knees are broke and all that. He's like, but when we get to the end of life, he's like, you're going to have these perfectly preserved bodies, but you never learned anything about yourself. You didn't go into those spaces. And and that's what it's about. It's like,
see what them knees can do.
See what those knees, those spiritual knees can do. Yeah. Like, it's about scar tissue. You know, scars contain wisdom. There's teachings in scars. And sometimes we got to like get annihilated in a beautiful way. It's like an oxymoron, but like sometimes that's the process of growth.
And you can trust that process.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
That was the biggest thing that one of the biggest things I took away is my faith has increased exponentially because I trust that, and this has been a whisper my whole life, is God, the universe asking me, how much do you trust me? How much? Do you trust me when I told you to leave that relationship? Do you trust me when I told you to pick up your stuff and travel cross country and you didn't know where you were going to go? Did you trust me when I said, pick up the phone and do this thing and put in your resignation? How much do you trust me? Right. And now it's like, I could have never, you know, my plans, they say like God laughs at our, you know, we show God our plans and he laughs. And
not bigger. Right. Yeah.
And so I hope, you know, my prayer and hope for everybody listening is that you will be encouraged to trust your own inner calling. You know, the part that isn't explainable with the science, the knowing that you don't know why you know it. You know, that voice is you, your higher self, the part of you that knows the way, that is that internal compass that's trying to get your attention. And if you have the courage, which is the heart, you know, to drop into your heart and out of your head, because your head's always going to talk you out of it, always, then you can go where most people will never go. Yeah.
There's that quote that goes, but what if I fall? And the great spirit comes in and goes, but darling, what if you fly? And that's it. It's like that leap of faith to allow for flight to take place. And more people are doing it. Like our ancestors laid it all down for us to be at this moment in time where we're not focused just on the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Right.
And we can actually self-actualize. It's the first time in history where we have access to all the world's wisdoms, all the teachings. And so anything that is considered a barrier is self-imposed. Mm-hmm. And I say that as a Black man coming from the streets of Vegas. One's race, one's economic situation, one's family dynamic really is all excuses. It's like the truth is like if you really, really, really want it at this juncture, it's there, but it takes courage.
Yeah.
It takes honesty. And what one will find quickly is when you do take that journey, it might be lonely at first, but eventually you're going to bump into some other superheroes mm-hmm. that got your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. Appreciate you so much. I see you. I love you. I'm always cheering for you, even if it's from Vegas and you're across the country. And just appreciate you for showing up and sharing your medicine.
It's an honor. And thank you for walking the walk, for being the medicine. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave you with this little gem that was given to me from a medicine man in the jungles, my brother Christian. He said that 99% of the world will never be able to work with the medicine. And that's the intention of it, because those that do get to work with the medicine become the medicine. And so they experience the medicine through the person who is healed or is in the healing journey. And so thank you for diving deep and becoming the medicine for so many people in your community and so many people who are listening. And, you know, cheers to the journey. It's only the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's, it only gets better.
I'm coming to Peru.
Come on, come on.
Y'all heard it here first. We'll have
come on.
Do another episode when I come back from Peru.
Episode in Peru.
Yes.
In the jungles.
Yes, yes. All right, you guys. Where, if you have anything going on you want people to know about, please share.
Yeah, so we're officially launching our first ever Warrior Men's Gathering.
Let's go.
June 17th to June 25th. Got some of the best coaches in the game. Taking place in the Sacred Valley of Peru, and it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to be working with one other medicine called Huachuma, mm-hmm. the grandfather of the mountains, and then Warrior Retreats and Warrior Women are all women's diet, and then our leadership retreat, we're about to launch that for November and December. So that's going to be super exciting. And then one of the things I'm most excited about right now is I'm diving deep with Nike on their first ever mental health rollout.
Wow.
And so being able to like really address healthy mindsets from a space of, from the lens of Nike is really incredible. And so a lot of times people focus on the physical fitness, mm-hmm. but like they don't focus on the mental fitness. And because you can't see it, it's not really quantifiable again, yeah. but it's so important. And so I think that a lot of people are realizing how important all these tools are. Mm-hmm. And now that we're removing all the taboos of what it means to be a whole person, mm-hmm. I think we're going to see so much magic come online so quick. And so anybody who wants to tap in to my space, like Instagram is the best way to follow me, Brandon at Brandon Collinsworth. And also if you want to be in proximity, Warrior Retreats.
Yes. We'll put all of that in the show notes. You guys make sure to go hang out with Brandon on his corner of the internet. You will be blessed. I'll see you next week on the Coachable Podcast. See y'all.